You're listening to KYRS 881 and 92.3 FM. Hey everybody, it's Federica on the show. So did you hear? This is a contemporary culture talk show where I, your host, take a deep dive into what's happening in culture today, be it zeitgeisty trendy topics or more serious issues that are facing society today. You can find a little bit of everything. I often call this a show about shower thoughts because my shower thoughts always go to like deep and existential places. But it's one of the two things. It's either deep existential questions or really ridiculous things. So yeah, essentially there's a little bit of everything in between on the air. And I hope you enjoy the show today. I'm shaking things up a little bit. As some of you who listen to the show regularly know, I occasionally will play the Hot Takes game on the air. And this is a card game called Hot Takes, the party game of spicy opinions. And each card reveals a spicy hot take about some zeitgeisty topic in contemporary culture today. Typically, I play this like by myself and I kind of quiz myself, and that's fine and all, but it's more fun if you have somebody else answering the questions or that you can alternate between, especially if you know you're talking to people from different walks of life, possibly different generations. So today, I have my lovely mother on the air.
Hello.
I conned her into doing this. And now it's okay. She agreed, but she's it'll be fine. It's fun. This is a fun time, Mom.
Okay.
I wanted to ask my mom to do this because I think, you know, a lot of the other people of, well, we're of different generations. You know, you were born in 1960. I was born in 1993. Although we are family, our life experiences in some ways are very different, and our views of the world can differ in a lot of ways, and it's kind of interesting. I don't know. This game is kind of a gamble when you play it with family members. I have done that with, like, Mark Colin, my husband, for those of you who are listening, my in-laws, including Autumn, my sister-in-law.
Oh, boy.
And she, yeah, got really... You gotta know who you're playing this game with, but I feel like you're a fairly safe bet. You get fired up sometimes, but that's part of the fun, so
we'll see.
Okay, anyways, we're gonna play the Hot Takes opinion game with my mom, who is of a different generation than me, and see how our takes on zeitgeisty topics of contemporary culture are alike or may differ. So with that, without any further ado, we're gonna get right into it. All right, Mom, are you ready?
Oh, I'm as ready as I can be.
Don't sound more excited, please.
It'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, it's not scary, I promise. Hey, it's like a mother-daughter bonding activity. You're singing that.
There you go.
Okay. First one is a pretty easy, silly one. It's always worth it to leave the party earlier than everyone else. Agree or disagree, and why?
Well, first thought coming into my head was, I agree. Mm-hmm. Also generational. I agree because the longer you may stay, depending on if there's libations or not, the more involved different things, conversations, getting a little too happy with the libations can lead to problematic endings, I think, if you stay too late. So leaving early gives you a good out. And then, you know, you might not lose friends that way either.
That is totally valid. So I am infamously, I tend to generally agree that it's better, but I am historically terrible at listening to that advice because I am always one of the last people when we have get-togethers with friends or house parties, bars, whatever may it be. I, especially if I've been like drinking, I get horrible FOMO and I refuse to go home.
Okay.
But it's really bad. Like I've gotten, I think, better with it, but I have now kind of seen the both sides of it, like what happens when you leave early versus when you're like usually one of the last stragglers there, which I often am and have been. You know, it kind of depends. Nowadays, I would say yes, I do think it's better to leave early You know, there's a saying that says, like, nothing good ever happened after 3 a.m. at a party or after 2 a.m.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, I think that's pretty true. You know, people just, at that point in the night, start getting more, as the night goes on, people just get rowdier, more out of control, bad stuff sometimes happens, or you just end up overindulging to the point of absolutely destroying yourself the next day. But there are some exceptions. I think particularly with, like, music festivals.
Yeah.
Or at a concert, at a show, or if you're with really good friends, sometimes the times when the rest of the chaos clears out and you're just hanging out with your best friends, with a really good group of people, and just kind of hanging out and vibing, sometimes those are the best times.
Yeah, depending on, you know, your group of people and the situation. If it's just a house party, it might not be the best to stay the last. Yeah. You might have to be on cleanup crew at that point.
You're right. Yeah, it really depends on the environment who you're with. But so there's exceptions to this, but generally speaking, I think we both agree on this one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's maybe at this point in my life, I'm getting a little bit of more maturity on this. You can't let the FOMO take all the control.
No.
All right. What? Throwing up is better than having a fever. Agree.
I agree.
I'd rather just, if I'm not feeling well, I'd rather just puke and get it done with than sit there and suffer.
Yep. That's what I used to tell you. Get it out. You'll feel better after.
I know, and it's funny, because I used to, it was like the throwing up was like the worst part of the experience, but then I always felt better.
Yep.
I hate being sick. Well, as you well know, Mom.
Yeah.
You would be the person who knows this. I hate being sick. I don't do well when I don't feel well. Like, I don't handle it well.
No.
So
throw it up and get it over with. You'll feel better in the end run.
It's totally true.
Takes less time to recover.
Yeah, well, it depends. I mean, if it's like, especially if I'm like, if I drank too much or something, I'll make myself throw up.
Yeah.
To get it over with. It's better than feeling terrible. Okay. Oh. Okay. Now we got one that might be a little bit spicy. And, you know, we can kind of, we'll see. Billionaires shouldn't exist.
I disagree in that, I don't know, you kind of have to have, in my world, in my thinking sometimes, you need, I can easily put the yin and the yang. I mean, there has to be, or not has to be, I think it's okay to be, have that. I mean, I don't know. It's a tough question, but if it's all the same, then we're all the same. It is, it might encourage people to strive to become like that billionaire or to have what the billionaire has. I mean, not that I would ever experience that in my lifetime, but, you know. It's a weird ground to be on.
I think this is where right what you just said right there is a great example of a big generational divide. The idea that there's that sort of idea that if you work hard enough, you could achieve this too.
Mm-hmm.
I think people of my generation and younger are of a much different mindset. We have seen how billionaires tend to abuse their powers horrendously. And I think with the economic reality, our mentalities around this are really affected by the environments in which we grew up. Because I think you grew up in an era where it was much more possible for people to work hard and achieve financial, not maybe billionaire status, but financial well-being and wealth, and that ethos of work hard and you'll achieve financial success was a lot more in reach than it feels to us in our contemporary world.
I agree with that statement, but it wasn't even, we didn't even
Did you even have, were there billionaires?
No, we didn't even, we couldn't even think that far as billionaires. The most we, you know, gosh, they're rich. They are a millionaire was where it was at. Billionaires was like, oh, right, that's beyond any,
like, you know, possibility.
Right. So now we're talking trillionaires, and it's still, for my mind, is way out there. So no, it's a generational thing. Yes, agreed. And but there was, coming up through that, you know, you worked hard, you had a job, you stayed with it, and you made your footprint along the way. And what the hard work, the result of the hard work was that you were financially fit. As far as billionaires back in the day, no. Again, they didn't really wasn't
exist,
no.
Huh?
I mean, if it did, like the Rockefellers or something, it was so extraordinary.
Mm.
So millionaires was something that, ooh, man, that's quite a reach, but maybe you could get there.
That's a really interesting point. I haven't really thought about much because I'm pretty sure most of the time I've been alive, there have been billionaires.
Mm-hmm.
But when you were growing up,
no.
It wasn't even a thing.
No,
so that,
wasn't.
Look at that. Think about that. That's interesting. My personal opinion, I'm conflicted on having a yes or no or like agree or disagree on this one because I think part of me that is really idyllic and neutral. In a perfect world where people didn't abuse power, I would disagree and think it doesn't matter how much money you have if you can trust people to be responsible with that kind of power. But in reality, I really think you can't. And in the context of today's world, I don't like billionaires. I don't think they're doing it. Maybe some are contributing some good things, but I think that kind of wealth tends to, that wealth and power, people mismanage it. And I think it's risky and dangerous to society as a whole. So that's my take. And I think that's a very generationally informed take as well. I think there's a lot more people. I mean, my generation's divided on this too. But that's more my standing. But I would think is really interesting about that is that this is a concept, the idea of like having that, someone having that much money and power, I think it's really hard for most people to even conceptualize how big that is. Mm-hmm. Because the difference between a millionaire and a billionaire is huge.
It's significant, yeah.
And it's hard. I think it's hard for people to wrap their minds around how much of a difference there is there. Just how unachievable billionaire status is.
Yeah. It, I, you know, to this day, living in the times of today, to even imagine billions of dollars. I think I can't generalize, but I think in a lot of cases, the ultra wealthy are, you know, we are out of touch with the common man, with the, you know, the hardworking, you know, middle class people. I think there's a huge disconnect because of the money and because of the privilege and because of, you know, maybe we're getting a big tax exemption or whatever it is. You know, I think there's they're out of touch, and not all though, but I think many are, and that's frustrating for those that have worked all their lives.
Absolutely.
To save some money up to retire.
Absolutely.
Comfortably.
I think that's something we all generations, most people, like unless you're part of the 1.1%, all kind of have in common there.
Mm-hmm.
All right, good one. Okay.
See?
Moving on to the next one. This one's kind of funny because of the context. the prompt says, I would date a person 40 years older than me if they were really rich, which in your case.
I would not. 40 years older than me?
What would that make the person 100, like?
106. No, thank you.
106 years old.
I think I can skip this answer because I would not.
No. Okay, but okay, think about it. If you were my age, would you do it? Like if you were, or if you were in your 20s and 30s, would you date somebody 40 years older than you if they were really rich?
No.
Yeah, you wouldn't money to get, you wouldn't get married to get the bag.
No. No. Oh my god, no.
Yeah, I agree. I'm sorry. Like money, I think maybe I'm coming from a place of privilege. Like, I think if I were really destitute, I would consider differently. But having a comfortable enough lifestyle, with having a comfortable enough life, like, absolutely not. No, I'm sorry. I'm not into old guys. Sorry. It's just opposed to me. So I think we agree there. Okay. Next one. Oh, okay. Interesting. Everyone should go to therapy at some point in their lives. Obviously, I agree. I'm a big therapy advocate, in therapy right now.
Oh, well,
but that... I think that's, you know, generationally, this is kind of, there is a divide. I think younger generations are a lot more pro-therapy.
I think so, too. I think there, in my generation, probably, there was more stigma associated with going to a therapist or a psychologist or psychiatrist. There was, you know, some, what's wrong with you? I mean, don't you have your, you know, your life together? Yeah, what's, yeah, so there, my generation back in the day, back when I was my daughter's age or younger, there was a big stigma about it. But I agree. I think you should. And there's different types of therapists and therapies. So, you know, I think it's a good thing. It's good to talk to sometimes somebody, you know, a third party person rather than your mom, your dad, your brother, sister, whoever, even a close friend. You know, somebody that is not associated with you or knows you as you are and can kind of give you a different perspective.
A neutral third party.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am glad to hear you say it's alleviating to hear you say that. I don't know. Maybe. And do you think you've like seen that a little bit through me, from my journey of getting mental health?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
It is because I do think you pointed out something important there, the stigma thing. There is still some stigma. And I think even when I was growing up, I mean, when I was a kid, and from what I remember, and I started to show signs of things like anxiety or trauma and things like that. And I didn't understand what was going on. Even in the 2000s, which would have been like the 2000s, I was still young, but old enough to still like kind of perceive the stigma there. And I think around that era, things started changing, but it still wasn't nearly as accepted as it is today.
No, so it definitely wasn't. No.
I ended up internalizing some of that stigma too, and it's something I'm still actively working on dealing with and getting rid of. And I think the change we've made, especially I think in the last 15 years, have made a lot of progress and it helps. But yeah, I think like what you said back then, it was like you saw a shrink if you were like,
oh my
really,
gosh,
really bad or like crazy or something. Yep, just wild.
You didn't talk about it. Right. If you were courageous enough or you needed them enough or whatever the situation, you didn't talk about it.
Mm.
It may be amongst really close friends, but it was not something that you just casually said, hey, I'm, you know, seeing the therapist for this, that, or another. It was, keep it quiet.
I think there's still a big, even beyond generation, I think there's a big gender gap with this. Especially men. And I think today, even in my generation and younger, men, it seems like a lot more people who identify as being male, or socialize as straight men, like they don't seem to feel as comfortable with that vulnerability of asking for help. Like it's still very much a thing. Whereas I think for us women, it's more acceptable, which I don't agree. That's like not okay. And I think it's the root source of a lot of problems in society. I could go really deep on that one, but I will go off the entire episode. So we're not going to do that. But, anyways, I think needless to say, things have changed and progressed, but there's still improvements to be made.
Absolutely.
Okay, here we go. Kind of related. People with mental illnesses should have more sick days. 100% agree. on days when I'm having, like, anxiety attacks, I can't be affected. Like, somebody who does deal with, like, mental illness or have had like severe issues with mental health. Absolutely.
I don't know. Yeah, I more sick days. I mean, if it, you know, it could be used and abused too. You know, you could pretend to have mental illness just to get out of work.
That's the problem.
To go ski for, you know, a day and then go biking the next day. You know, I mean, you really need, that's a fine line. I
agree. How do you prove it? Yeah, that's hard. See, that's where I agree with the card, but that is a very real issue. And I think that's kind of a stereotype I've heard from, like, baby boomers and older generations critiquing younger generations for abusing mental health days. I'm sure it happens. Like, I don't know if it happens as much as, you know, anybody can abuse a mental health day like they can abuse a regular sick day.
Right.
You know?
Right, right.
But if we have, you know, I don't know that having more of them would encourage people to abuse it more. I think if you're going to abuse the system, you're going to abuse the system no matter what. But I don't know. I don't know how much of a difference it would make. I think there is the concern over people abusing the system is legitimate, but I still think we could all use more health days and sick days. Like, if you're actually, when you actually need it, you really need it, so.
But, yeah, you just don't be the person to pretend that you need it, you know. I mean, because it takes away, it's like crying wolf, you know. It takes away from those that actually definitely struggle, you know, to get going, to get out and get a, you know, go to work or do whatever, have a productive day, so. And that's not fair.
Okay. Yeah, I totally agree with that. Okay, next one. Pregnant women can drink in moderation. I don't know. Has the opinion on that changed?
I don't know. I haven't talked about that recently.
I've not had children, so I wouldn't know. But has the science changed on that at all? Like, when you were like pregnant with me, what was the advice on alcohol?
Not to drink
at all.
At all.
Okay.
So I drank non-alcoholic beer if I had a craving for it. I didn't drink wine, but I didn't drink much wine when I was living in Italy, which is odd. But my generation, my mother, she didn't drink, but she smoked. And, you know, that was back in the 60s, 50s and 60s. And she smoked through my brother. The pregnancy with my brother and with me. And, you know, I don't know. I think it probably is not best. But I think if you have maybe a half a glass for an occasion, a birthday, New Year's Eve, a little sip, a half a glass of, you know, champagne, Prosecco, a little bit of wine is not gonna do the damage.
Sure. So, like a small sip versus like
right to
an entire glass, because I know for a while there was, I remember just even seeing this on the news, there was like a study show, like a glass of wine, you know, a week, or like a couple glasses of wine a week for pregnant women is good.
It is, and then, good, yeah.
But I think that later, and so the whole myth of like wine being good for you is unfortunately kind of been debunked. Yes, the grapes in wine do have antioxidant properties, but the inflammation that the alcohol causes kind of counteracts any positive benefits you might glean. Unfortunately, later findings like came out and just say basically no amount of alcohol is ever beneficial for you.
I think under the doctor's recommendation at the time, and most doctors, it's like, you know, I can give it up for 9 months, no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just be on the safe side. But
yeah, I think we can both agree on that one. It's just better to be on the good side. But I was just curious to know if the wisdom or the medical advice had changed at all.
Not since I've had you.
So at least since the early 90s.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know about today. I would imagine.
Well, no, today is still absolutely not. Like, no alcohol, no weed, no nothing.
Right. I would imagine it's the same.
Awesome. All right. Next. I don't know if you'll have much of an opinion on this, but I do. Well, I'm conflicted. Bodybuilders are healthy.
Well, that's up to for interpretation. I mean,
health. I don't know that I personally know quite enough about the topic, but I know that, like, it seems like there's a way to do it that's healthy and a way to do it that can be very unhealthy.
Right, right. If, I mean, if you're just lifting weights, you go to the gym and you're lifting weights and you're keeping yourself, you know, your muscles fit and so on, that's one thing, yes. But if you're using steroids after, you know, supplements after this and that to achieve a certain look, and it goes on for a long time, no, it's not healthy. Mm-hmm. I don't think any sort of enhancing drug, whatever it's supposed to enhance in long run, is good.
Yeah. I think as a prompt overall, I'm neutral. I'm going to go neutral on this one. I don't agree either one way or the other. I don't think it makes you inherently healthy or unhealthy. But I do think, like, there are some people who bodybuild for years and take care of their health, but I think there's a very dark kind of abusive side of it where people really get quite sick and make themselves quite sick, and you see body dysmorphia, eating disorders, substance use, and you're seeing this a lot nowadays with steroids. You know, there's like a huge steroid abuse
thing
going on. Yeah,
absolutely. And they're not good. And I mean, they're good in if you use them for short term, that you can get the quicker results. But in the long term, your body can't handle that.
Yeah,
it's gonna suffer.
I think that was one. This is one of those things where it really depends. It just really depends. Yeah. There's no yes or no, but it's a watch your back and be careful about it kind of thing. Like, I don't think all bodybuilding is necessarily unhealthy, but it's risky.
Right. If you say, it is risk. There are risks.
So it's, you gotta just be smart about it. Okay, here's kind of a random one. I'd rather be deaf than blind.
Oh, wow.
I don't know.
I don't want to be either, so, but if you pick and choose, I guess I'd rather be deaf than blind. Blind, because that, number one, you'd get vertigo. I mean, yes, being deaf too, but I just, that would not work. So, for me.
Yeah, personally. I don't know. I feel like if we're talking totally, totally blind,
no,
that would be hard. I think because we're so visual as creatures, as animals, it would be a lot harder to adapt with, like, if we're talking total blindness to being deaf. But the hard thing for me would be being deaf is, like, then you couldn't hear music anymore, and that's I love music too much. I don't know, that's a hard one. I don't know,
that is a hard one. It's like, I don't want to answer really, because I don't want either or, but, you know, if you put me on the point, I'd rather see than hear.
I guess I'd rather, yeah. And especially, I guess if we're talking like totally deaf, totally blind, or like somewhere on the deaf blind spectrum where it's like you can be legally blind but still not be completely blind, or like deaf but not be like totally, totally deaf.
Right. Yeah. No, I wouldn't. Don't want to lose my sight.
Yeah. I think. Yeah. I guess I agree, but they would both be terrible.
Yes.
For somebody, you know, not somebody who is not used to it. Like, I think some people who are born blind or deaf live just fine, is what they know. It's not to say that deafness and blindness as inherent traits are terrible. I think I would have a terrible time adapting,
well,
personally.
If you all of a sudden became deaf or blind,
I would not adjust. I probably would not adjust well, personally, that's all.
No, so.
Okay, next. Workplace dating is appropriate?
No.
Okay. Why? I tend to agree, actually, honestly. I've never done it, but I would agree. But I want to hear why you think so.
I don't even know how to explain.
Was there any particular way of thinking around this when you were growing up in your generation? Do you think your generation has a particular attitude towards this? One way or the other.
No, I don't know. Attitude. I mean, it obviously it happened. It just, It sets you up for a lot of problems, complications. It's
yeah, especially if it goes bad.
Workplace, one way or the other. Friendships, absolutely. Dating, no. You keep your work and your private life separate. And if you combine those two, then it gets into a lot of complications, muddy waters. You have husbands or wives, maybe, from the other side getting angry. No, I don't think so. I think you got to keep them as much as you possibly can separate. Not that it wouldn't work in all cases, but it depends on the work. It depends on the situation, you know.
Yeah. I think this is really going to depend on person to person. I personally tend to agree. I am a big advocate, like a big believer in, I can't say it all, like the original, the full phrase on the radio, but don't poop where you eat.
Yeah, right.
it just risks getting really messy. You know, I think maybe the exception sometimes being like if you and your spouse start a business together that you're passionate about, but like, you know, I think you can make it work. But you really, I would say that's an exception, not the norm, in my opinion. I think it's there's too much potential for mess in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's me, though. You know, I think some people disagree, but that's for me, for sure. Okay. People should be compensated extra for their commute to and from work.
No. Really? I disagree. Extra?
If like you should get paid to commute to work.
It depends. And again, these are, you know, open-ended questions. So it depends on the work. It depends on the distance. It depends on the frequency that you're having to travel to go to work. I mean, if you're traveling 5 miles to get to your job, no. You could walk if you had to. You can take a bike. You can do other forms of transportation. I think long distance, they require you to go, you know, a longer distance for work, depending on the conditions of the roads. Yeah. There's a lot of variables in one.
It seems like there's some types of jobs where you get commuting or like hazard pay or something like that.
Well, you do. You should get mileage, and you can put that on your tax returns, you know, for the mileage you put in, and you get compensated some way, you know. Yeah, but it depends on the work. It depends on a lot of things.
I think in theory it would be nice, but I don't know that there's any way that you could
track it
or make it clean so that people don't just completely abuse it, so that then you could just live 5 hours away from your job and commute those extra 5 hours or maybe get paid more. In theory it's a nice idea. In practice,
practicality, yeah.
I don't think
it
works.
How are you going to implement that? So,
yeah, I don't think it. It's a nice thought, but I don't think it works. Oh, okay. A British accent automatically makes you more attractive.
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah.
Oh my God, you too? Okay, so it's not a new generation thing. Okay, why? Why?
I don't know a why. I don't know if there's a why. It's just, it's a different accent, but that doesn't even explain it. I don't know. The British are,
I think it's, you know,
the correctness, the English language spoken correctly.
I think, you know what I think it is? I personally don't agree. I don't know. I've never been an accent person. Some people are like, I know, like, a lot of people agree with you, though, obviously. To the point that this is a card they put in the game. But I think it's funny. You know what I think it is? I think in our culture here in the United States, we use British accents, or we think of British accents as this sort of sign of sophistication and elevation.
Yep.
Because of the media and the movies and TV shows. And I think when you, historically, sophisticated characters in movies and TV shows, when if you want to make them seem more fancy or smart or whatever, we give them a British accent or they have British accents. Right. So I think it's a conditioned thing. See, and I like I wonder then the other way around, like, what do British people think about American accents?
They hate it.
I don't know. I'd be honestly curious, like, what a Brit would say.
I know what my British friends...
They hate the American accent.
They hate it. It's so rough. And, you know, we don't pronounce our T's, you know, and the A's are at instead of ah. Yeah, they don't like it.
I do think... I'm going to sound stupid. Maybe. Hopefully not. That's a bit of a... The British accent... sounds more refined because I can't do the because in the British accent.
Because
they use the front palate, and it's more. Yeah, it's just. Oh God.
I mean, they can insult you. In my past experience, they can give you, well, not insult you, but even that, they can criticize you, but you're not. You don't know you're being really criticized.
They're
very cutting. They can be very cutting in their words, but you don't recognize it as an American. You're like, well, you know, because of the accent. No. It's like they're so prim and proper. They can't be.
Until you meet somebody from, like, who has a Cockney accent, yeah, or, like, you know, there's a big variation in British.
There is.
There's a variation in British accents, too. I think here in the United States, we're used to that sort of... popularized, sort of refined London sort of... what we would consider high, quote, in air quotes, class English. But I don't know. I have heard some British accents where it's like, I don't know. I've heard some people, like, it's like, what rock did you crawl out from under? Like, you know, they all have their ranges of accents like we do in the U.S. I tend to find, for example, I think in some ways, some forms of American accents can be romanticized. Like, for example, the, like, refined Southern accent.
Southern, yeah.
I think sometimes people romanticize that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it kind of depends. It really just depends on how you're raised and, like, what the culture you're exposed to. Anyways, going back to the card. So you agree.
Yeah. Oh, I do.
British accent makes people more attractive. If you're
listening to it and not necessarily seeing the person... You know, that's another element there. But just listening to it, it piques your interest. You know, you're like, oh, yeah.
There's a little bit of exoticism for us Americans.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. No, it makes sense. It totally makes sense. I just, yeah, for me personally, for some reason, it doesn't really have much an effect. However, the way people speak does make a difference in how, you know, if I perceive them to be attractive or not. And, like, but it doesn't necessarily have to do with it being a British accent. So, yeah, I don't know. But I know. I think I'm in the minority in this one. I think I'm in the minority.
The British accent. Yeah, you could be.
I think so. Okay. Next one. I'd rather lose all the money I made this year than lose all the memories I've gained this year.
Well, it depends on... I can't agree or disagree. It depends on what year you just went through. So...
Like this specific year. This past, like this past 12-month period.
Well, God, that's a moot point. If I have to say yay or nay, I would say no. The money wasn't great or grand, but the money was steady. So we could plan for upcoming retirement. So yeah, and this last year wasn't anything exceptional for memories.
Yeah.
It just depends.
I would say generally, yeah, it really depends on the year.
Yeah.
If I had a terrible year, there's some times where I'm like, I wish I could just forget about this all. But then again, if you make a lot of money, then you might not want to lose that money. For me, it's kind of neutral. I don't know. I don't want to lose all the money I made, but I think I'd rather not lose my memories. Not that anything that memorable happened, but for the sake of sanity. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm kind of indifferent. Yeah, I don't know.
That's why I'm saying it's a moot point.
They're both kind of uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next. Blondes have more fun.
Absolutely.
Yeah? My mom is blonde, by the way. Okay, what makes you say that?
Not that they have more fun. I really can't say that that's true. But My daughter and I were just talking about this yesterday.
It was a few days ago.
A few days ago about the difference. Oh, yes, because you put a blonde wig on.
Yep.
So, yes, I can say I don't know that they have more fun. I really don't. But I can say that they do get, blondes get noticed, turn heads more. And I'm not talking just on the male side. I think women, too, will maybe at times do a look longer, a double take. Mm. I don't know why, really. But I know that the blondes stick out. The blonde hair tends to turn heads or stick out or be something of, you know, eye catching. And I don't know why.
It's very fetishized.
Yeah.
I think in a lot of cultures, but Western culture, and I think so. Tell me if I'm wrong here, but I think especially during the, maybe not the 70s, but like the 80s and in the 90s for sure.
Blondes.
Yeah, that was the preferred. That was kind of the.
No.
What? Really? I feel like they were all about. It was all about being blonde.
Well, maybe. I don't know. I didn't pay much attention.
Maybe it was more like the 2000s because like Britney Spears and that era. Because I think it definitely in the 2000s there was like 2000s was very like pro blonde, which is why I think. Now, millennials, that's like a stereotype about millennials from Gen Z, we're all like obsessed with being blonde, which it's like, well, yeah, if you go back to the 2000s, that was what was in. But
in your generation, earlier than that, oh my gosh.
I think actually the 70s seems more like brunette energy, like more, you know, the fashion styles. Yes, there was blondes, but like, I think the blonde is fetishized more than it's like. Here's the stereotype, and tell me if I'm wrong. Blonde was seen as more of like a fetishized, like kind of sexualized
thing.
Versus the brunette being seen as more sophisticated.
True.
That, which is like is absolutely made up, by the way. But
well, that's how movies presented it in a lot of cases. So you could go back as far as Greta Garbo. You could go back to Marilyn Monroe.
Right.
So,
it started with Marilyn. I think she
part was of it.
One of the first big influences that made blonde really popular.
Stuck out. And then, let's see, back in the 60s, the Twiggy.
Yeah.
And, you know.
And she was a brunette, though.
No.
Right?
Not necessarily, no. But anyway.
Okay.
It goes back in time. And it's just, I think, generational, like Federica is saying. I think blondes, I don't know if now it's the same stereotype, but then blondes were considered bubblehead blondes, and the brunettes were the more smarter, you know. So, you know, it's all how it was presented in then. We didn't have the media back then. It was just television.
Well, that is the media, though.
Well, yeah, but I mean social media.
It's not social media, no. But it's still, but I think those movies were really, the media from the 70s, you know, 50s through, well, I guess maybe it's particularly 60s through the 90s, really shaped the idea of what was considered attractive. So, okay, in my take on this, do blondes have more fun? I don't think so. I think it's a myth. As far as like lived experience as a human being, I don't think it makes that much of a difference. I do see the difference in how like people treat you though.
Mm-hmm.
And so with the context, like you were saying about the wig. So I occasionally will wear wigs out. So by the way, I'm brunette. I have short brown hair. But I will sometimes, change my hair color. And lately what I've been doing is I'll go out and wear a wig just to change up my look, whether it's to match an outfit or just for funsies. But over the past couple of years, I started kind of doing this as a social experiment because I noticed that when I wear certain kinds of wigs, particularly long blonde hair wigs, I get like so much more, I get different kind of attention.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm going out to the bars, first of all, I get more attention across the board from men and women,
yeah,
like across the spectrum.
Yeah.
And it really depends on if you're somebody who likes that, if you like the attention or if you don't like the attention. Because if you don't like the attention, then it can be a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it can be, for me, it's like, you know, because it's fun because it's like an experiment and I can just see how people react to you. I'm the same person. I keep the same mannerisms. I'm like literally the only thing that changes is the hair, and the way people approach you is like noticeably different, which I think is just hilarious.
Yeah, it is true. It is a truth to that.
Okay, next question. Seeing movies in theaters is better than seeing them at home.
I agree. Your experience, I think, is more, you're more I don't know. There's a sensitivity you get into.
Sensory experience.
Yeah, you get into a big theater, you have surround sound, you're in this different environment. Big screen. So I do. At a home, it's fine, unless you've got, movie theater in your home, mm-hmm. which we do not. But yeah, I enjoy going out to see movie. I think I get a better experience. It's just a unique experience.
I agree. I think that, well, especially in the day of, like, today's age of streaming,
mm-hmm.
it's so easy to watch. I mean, it's great that we have, like, this enormous ease of access to film like we've never had in the history of film. But with that, that ease of access also comes this kind of sense of it just becoming mundane.
Desensitized.
And
yeah.
I think you appreciate something more when it's a little bit of extra effort, like to go to the theater to see a movie. Like, there's a reason why theaters are still popular in the day of streaming. Mm-hmm. Is because it's the experience of going to the theater, having the surround sound, the big screen,
right.
making a sort of event out of seeing this movie, adds some value to it.
Yeah.
So I agree. And honestly, anything that gets us like off of our couches and out of the house and like in public interacting with people, watching movies is not really social. But anything that gets you out the house nowadays, I'm in support of. So I agree. I actually realized, so the last movie I saw in theaters was maybe a month ago, but before that, I went to a Halloween, I did see a rerun of Interview with a Vampire, the 1990s one, in theaters during Halloween for a special showing, but that was just like part of another event. But the last time I intentionally went to a theater to watch a movie, I think was the Barbie movie in 2023.
Yeah, I remember you saying
that.
So
it's been
that.
A while, like, yeah. I don't go to the movies that much.
Which is too bad. But, you know, it depends on time and, you know, distance and that too. I haven't been to a theater in a long time. But I don't live very near any sort of movie theater. So it's a big event if we were to pack the car up and go.
That's fair. I don't... Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, my God. I think it'd been like 2 years since the last time I've been in a movie theater. Barbenheimer summer, because we saw both in theaters, Barbie and Oppenheimer.
And sometimes the crowd in the movie theater.
Oh, yeah.
is interesting. You know, the dynamic of, you know, whatever the movie you're seeing and the reactions from the audience. Mm. You know, the laughs, the cries, the sighs, the anger, whatever it may be, is kind of engaging.
That's a good point. Oh, yeah, so that actually makes me think. So the last movie I did see in theaters at the time that we're recording this was Nuremberg.
Yeah.
Yeah. About the Nuremberg trials in Minneapolis.
Hmm.
And, that got some, there was some, just at the very end. It was, people were, like, yelling political stuff, like, at the very end of when the movie ended and, like, about things today. And it was, like, okay. I mean, I get it, but it's interesting. It was a little, like, not, like, uncomfortable, but also, like, it's, I don't know, it can go both ways. Sometimes it's kind of cool to have that crowd experience. Other times it's like, oh my God, not again.
Yeah.
Uncomfortable.
Yeah, depending on the subject of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, if it's the Minions or,
right. You know, something silly where it's like, this was, like, a heavy,
yeah.
like, kind of like heavy movie. So, but I mean, generally speaking, though, I do agree. I love a movie day, like in the theaters. Okay, let's see. I don't know if you would have a particular opinion on this. Playing too many video games will make you dumber. Too many.
I think, well,
what does too many mean? Okay, here's the, there's a problem in the question. What does too many mean?
Right, I don't know. That's subjective. I think, yeah, I just think that the video game, like going back to getting out and going and see a movie, rather than sitting at home and streaming it. Video games. In my generation, we didn't have them. So, too much, I don't know. I don't play them. But I think it's best always to limit the amount of time that you are staring at a computer, interacting with, you know, Dungeons and Dragons. You've got other people playing at the same time, but yet you're not interacting personally with the person, you know, one-on-one. I think it's better always to kind of limit the amount of time you're doing video games and get out and run and, you know, get out. shoot some hoops or bike around or something.
In today's terms, go touch some grass.
Yes.
Go touch grass.
Get out. Get out.
Yeah. I think the tricky thing about that card is just the wording, too many video games. So you're already implying there's an imbalance or an excess there. So if we're talking about doing something too much, I mean, too much of anything
is not good.
Can be bad.
Yeah.
I don't think, like, video games inherently are not good or bad. They just are. In fact, I think they can be relaxing or engaging, or like what Colin does.
Yeah, right.
My husband. He will play with, like, friends. He'll play video games with friends that live far away and you don't get to see in person. And that's his way of connecting with friends and socializing. So I think they can be positive. I think the catch is the too much piece, like doing too much of anything. And like you're saying, if it's like the only way you're spending your free time, then maybe that's not so good. And, right. And if you're, you know, as far as it making you dumber, I mean, I don't know about it affecting your intellect. I don't think it can make you negatively affect your intellect, just more your health and your social life. Right. And maybe then, you know, your awareness and if you're spending all your time doing that instead of, like, I don't know, learning about things, sure, it can make you, I guess, quote-unquote, dumber.
Right.
But it's, yeah, that's a subjective one. All right. Final question of the game.
Here.
Living 100 years in the future would be better than living 100 years in the past.
Oh, God. Yeah. Wow.
Right?
That's hard to answer.
I don't even know if there's going to be a planet Earth in 100. I mean, there's a planet over here, but like what?
That's far out. Really hard. I can't even imagine what it'll be like in 100 years from now. I really can't. Yeah, robots, lots of robots. But
I can't either. I think we've gotten to the point where change happens so quickly and expansively that we have lost kind of the ability to see into to predict the future.
Yeah.
No matter what generation we are, I think we're all kind of facing this unprecedented level of uncertainty about the future where we all don't even know. Visualizing 100 years in the future now feels a lot harder than it would have maybe 100 years ago, especially as you go further back into history, because throughout most of human history, 100 years didn't make that much of a difference in how life looked.
No, yeah.
Centuries could go by where life looked relatively similar or the same across, if we're talking about the whole spectrum of human history, but now things happen, like change happens so exponentially fast, we struggle to predict the future anymore. But at the same time, so it's a gamble. Do you risk jumping 100 years into what could be a completely alien, what could feel like a completely alien world? Or go back in the past, and I think for us, especially as women, we're going back to a time where we didn't have full human rights.
We didn't have voting rights as such. So going
in the past, that your identity really
is limited. Is in a box. You're put into it for women in a box. As far as women's rights.
If you're a woman or a person of color.
Yeah.
You know, any other kind of marginalized group going back 100 years in the past, you're potentially really compromising your quality of life and freedom, literally, there. Yeah. But
But looking that far into the future,
it's just, at this point, it's just a straight up gamble. I don't know.
Maybe they even themselves out.
I think I would take the leap and just say, let's see what happens. This mess is already, you know what the past looks like and what the risks could be. And then the familiar mess of today, I think I'm at a point of like, what do I got to lose? Let's see what happens. I think I'd go 100 years in the future.
You would.
Even though I'm a history nerd, I think personally for me, I'm just like, let's see what happens.
Yeah. Well,
okay. Final answer. Future or past? If
I really had to choose, kids. I don't know. Like you brought up good points about the past. So, you know, you had limited.
I think you'd be okay.
I would be okay because of who I am and how I live and where I live.
Yeah.
So, if I were in an urban setting, lived in a city.
You could be a recluse and kind of live by your own rules and you'd make it okay.
Yeah.
You could find a way and at least it's predictable.
I could. But as far as, other people, people living in cities or whatever, urban settings.
Culture, part of the world.
Yeah. Or the social aspect, social media. I think the future is more where you would go. I would not necessarily, because I'm not the geeky computer lover. So, yeah, I would tend to find more comfort in
the simplicity.
The simplicity of life.
All right, well, you can find, go back to the past and live out your days.
Or I could get chased by Indians. Who knows?
Or you can, I guess maybe not 100 years from now, but yeah. You could go back to the past. So you could, I guess, just yeet me into the future and see what happens, and it'll be a surprise.
And there you go. Yeah.
But that is all the time we have. So we did. Look, you did it.
Good job. I did it. Yay.
My mom made it. She that was actually kind of interesting. I like that. What do you think?
It was great. I think we agreed more than we disagreed.
Right?
Yeah.
I like that. It's a nice kind of reminder that even across generations and so at the end of the day,
there's commonalities.
And wants and we can, our experience may shape the way we see things, but at the end of the day, we're all more similar than we are different across generations. So thanks for playing.
Yeah, thank you for asking.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. And I hope you enjoyed today's show. And if you have any thoughts, questions, comments, concerns, ideas for the show, you are welcome to reach out to me. You can shoot me an email at sodidyouhear@kyrs.org. Again, that's sodidyouhear@kyrs.org. And you can find some recent show updates on my show page. I have finally gotten around to uploading some recordings from the past few weeks. So if you missed the last couple of weeks of shows, and if you haven't checked the show page in a while, there's some new content on there. So go ahead and check it out if you want to hear some new content from the past few weeks. Anyways, thank you all for tuning in, and we will catch you next time. Bye-bye.